Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Natureversity podcast. I am your host, Chris Hyde, and today we are going to be talking all about dendrology, which is the study of trees. And in particular, we are going to be discussing the hackberry tree, also known as the sugarberry. So hackberry trees and I, we have a very special relationship. I have been getting to know these trees for over a decade now, and I'm really excited to share with all of you the history, the uses, and why hackberries are such an amazing part of our central Texas hill country. Hackberries or sugarberries go by the Latin name Celtis levigata, and that genus name of Celtis traces back to Pliny the Elder, who was an ancient Roman naturalist who viewed it similar to a sweet-fruited African lotus tree, which has the Latin name Celtis australis. Now, later in 1753, a man named Carl Linnaeus, who was a Swedish biologist and physician, who is also known as the father of modern taxonomy, he formalized Pliny's Celtis as the name for our hackberry, likely because both trees share that tiny but tasty fruit quality, and our name we use for it today, hackberry, is most likely a translation from the word hagberry or hackberry tree, where its actual Latin name is Prunus patis, which is actually a type of cherry tree from the rose family, and it closely resembles that of a hackberry. And in the genus Celtis, there are about 60 to 70 species all around the world. Our species of sugarberry, which is named levigata, is all about those smooth leaves, and it comes from the Latin word levis, which means polished. Its cousin, who also lives here in Texas with us, Celtis reticulata, commonly known as the netleaf hackberry, gets its name from the netted veins, reticulum, which translates to little net, on its rough textured leaves. Now, all hackberries used to, before 2003, belong to the elm family, or the Olmaceae family. This explains their oval leaf shapes, alternating leaf growth, and their strong, flexible wood. But unlike elms, hackberries produce bizarre, warty barks and edible berries. Now, this classification, again, was pre-2003, and since then, it's been reclassified into the cannabis family. Now, I know that sounds odd, but there's a lot of evidence that suggests the move isn't just DNA-related. So our sugarberry, or southern hackberry, Celtis levigata, is a medium to large tree and grow up to 60 feet tall, with a spreading crown and wart-studded gray bark. When discussing their habitats, they are quite adaptable and can thrive in a variety of soil types. They generally prefer moist, well-drained soils, but they can also tolerate drier conditions and can even handle occasional flooding. They are particularly known for their ability to grow in soils with a high pH or alkaline type soil and can even handle clay and limestone soils. So think vacant lots, riverbanks, fence rows, wooded areas, etc. They are found from Indiana all the way down into Mexico. The leaves are asymmetrical, alternate, simple, and deciduous. They are brightly green and usually 2 to 4 inches long, oval in shape with a long tapering front tip. Both surfaces of the leaf have very prominent veins, and the base of the leaf that connects to the petiole is often tapered to one side and rounded on the other. The flowers are very small and they're hardly noticeable in the spring. The fruits are round, small, dull red to bright red, sweet, with a large single seed inside, and they ripen fully in the fall. Fruits can sometimes last on the tree until late winter and into the early spring next year. Their lifespan is typically 150 to 200 years old when healthy, and the oldest hackberry is located on Goose Island State Park near Rockport, Texas, and is called the Big Tree. How old it is, they aren't exactly sure, but some people say it's 1,000 years old. No one at Texas A&M has been able to confirm this, however, so probably more in the 100 to 200 year range. Now, Celtis reticulata, the netleaf hackberry, it's a little bit smaller of a tree, 30 foot, often shrubbier, with more gnarly branches and sandpapery leaves. And the hackberry tree is often overlooked in Texas arboreal landscapes due to its lack of ornamental appeal. Unlike most visually striking species, it exhibits very poor flowers in the spring, it's got minimal fall coloration, and its irregular growth form, which leads many arborists to dismiss it as a junk tree or a trash tree. Its bark is characterized by these pronounced corky protuberances, and these corky ridges are nature's armor against droughts and fires. Its branchy structure tends to be somewhat erratic, with frequent small twigs and branches dropping off as it grows older and older. The species is also susceptible to various biotic stressors, including leaf galls, wood-boring insects, and fungal pathogens that cause root and heartwood rot. As noted by horticulturalist Howard Garrett in 2002, the hackberry often appears to be in a constant state of decline, further diminishing its urban landscape appeal. Additionally, its prolific seed dispersal contributes to its reputation as an opportunistic colonizer, often establishing itself in disturbed areas where it is then perceived as invasive. Many newer homeowners also cut them down due to their history of rotting from the roots and the inside, splitting apart, and or then falling over onto residential homes. However, when healthy, the hackberry possesses remarkable ecological resilience, enabling it to thrive under adverse conditions where other species typically fail. It tolerates nutrient-poor soils, prolonged droughts, and high winds, making it a practical choice for erosion control and windbreaks. With adequate moisture and fertile substrates, its growth form improves significantly, a trait historically recognized by urban planners who utilized it as a shade tree in the early Texas settlements. Indeed, Lewis in 1915 documented Celtis as one of the most prevalent shade trees in all of the region. While it may lack aesthetic refinement, the hackberry's adaptability and hardiness really show its ecological value, particularly in all of these challenging Texas environments. Hackberry wood is seldom prioritized in commercial lumber due to its predominance of sapwood, relatively low density, its very coarse grain structure. While unsuitable for structural appliances or high-end woodworking, it has historically served a couple of utilitarian roles, including fuel production, fencing, and crafting. Early settlers occasionally utilized it for furniture, though its pale, its unweathered appearance required so much frequent maintenance that it didn't become worth the effort. Noah Smithwick in 1983 documented 19th century Mormon craftsmen near the Marble Falls area of Austin constructing chairs and all kinds of bedsteads from hackberry, and they were referencing it as Palo Blanco, which was a Spanish epithet that translated to the white wood. Indigenous groups also recognized its workability. Lapan Apaches, for instance, they would employ it in their saddle-making practices, and that is still to this day sustained by some of the Kickapoo tribes. The Caddo basket weavers also incorporated some hackberry branches and twigs into their designs as well, and there's multiple documentations of the bark being used in all kinds of ways for baskets and shoes and other things. The tree's small drupes, commonly termed sugarberries, provide critical winter forage for avian species such as bluebirds, northern cardinals, and wild turkeys, as well as mammals such as white-tailed deer, raccoons, possums, and so many more. Butterflies such as the hackberry emperor and the morning cloak also depend on its foliage as a larval host. And as I said before, the fruits have a very hard seed inside, and it's like eating a popcorn kernel. So don't expect to walk up to the tree and get a bunch of them off there and eat hundreds of them at a time like it's a simple snack. The fruits are very tough. However, archaeological evidence underscores the fruit's long-standing human use, and there are some claims that this may be one of the oldest known foraged foods to our ancestors in North America. Coprolite studies, which is fossilized scat analysis, have detected hackberry pollen dating back 500 BCE, while contested findings up in Denton County near Dallas suggest potential human utilization as early as 10,000 years ago. The fruits are loaded with proteins and fats. Ethnographic records indicate that the Kiowa processed the berries into a sweet paste, roasted it on sticks, while the Comanches enriched this preparation with some animal fats and other fruits. So modern recipes include syrups and survival foods such as stone-baked seed, meal-type crackers. You could pulverize them, dry them out, pulverize them again, and then add all of that crushed flour to other tree flours such as mesquite, pecan, walnut, or acorn, and you can make some really delicious delicious wild foraged breads. So if you're a fan of almond milk, you could try hackberry milk. Simply crush about a cup of the fruits and add them to 2 cups of simmering hot water for about 30 minutes to 40 minutes. And then straining them will produce a very similar drink to that of almond milk. The kick is that it's really sweet naturally without any added sugar or syrup. It can become a little thick when making this, so adding more water to it and stirring it will make it more of a milk consistency or a water consistency depending on your preference. So in the springtime, when you see all those little green fruits forming, you can actually snack on those as well. And it turns out hackberries have some surprising hidden talents beyond just being survival food and a really cool tree. Their shallow roots have been twisted into cordage, used to make yellow dye, and I myself have made 3 longbows that work just as well as my hickory bows and ash bows. I've made multitudes of baskets out of the roots. But overall, when you find dead branches of hackberries to carve or try to turn into bushcraft tools, they often aren't that great unless they have just been cut about a couple of weeks prior. What happens is insects get underneath the bark, weakening the wood to the point where any type of bow drill apparatus or trap part that you'd like to make will cause the stick to further break down and eventually snap. My test is I pick up a piece of hackberry and I'll whack it against something a few times to see if it can withstand a few of the hits. If so, then maybe it's worth giving your project a try on that stick. Now, there's even Texas folks who have remedies that claim that hackberry wood makes a great natural toothbrush and that all you need to do is grab a fresh green twig with the thickness of about a pencil, chew it up till it's super, super soft on one end, and then you can use that bristly end as a toothbrush. Hackberry trees and mistletoe also share a fascinating, albeit one-sided, story in nature. These resilient trees serve as the prime real estate for mistletoe species like desert mistletoe in arid regions and oak mistletoe in the woodlands here of Texas. Their thin bark is nutrient-packed, making them irresistible targets for the mistletoe. Birds such as the cedar waxwing and mockingbirds play delivery service, depositing mistletoe seeds that latch onto the hackberry's branches. While moderate infestations might cause some branch dieback, typically healthy hackberries can endure. Though heavy infections can sap the tree's energy in the long term. Yet there's this balance here because the birds that are drawn to the mistletoe's berries will also spread the hackberry seeds by consuming them as well. Beyond ecology, the relationship also holds cultural significance. Indigenous groups like the Kahuilla, they historically use these plant combinations in traditional medicines, while more modern-day arborists carefully prune infected limbs in urban areas to prevent the spread of mistletoe. So intriguingly, research indicates hackberries with light mistletoe loads may actually weather droughts better than their unaffected counterparts, hinting at potential hidden hormonal benefits from the mistletoe. It's a remarkable example of nature's complexity, where even parasites can play a vital role in an ecosystem's balance. Now, as we come to a close here, I want you to picture the wide open plains of North Texas, where the only landmarks for miles and miles and miles were twin groves of hardy hackberry trees. These tree groves were so prominent that in 1887, the town we all know as Plainview, Texas, nearly became known as Hackberry Grove, until settlers decided to highlight the flat and treeless landscape instead of the hackberry trees. Then in 1941, a massive flood destroyed the grove and left only 2 hackberry trees standing. In 1972, the Hale County Commissioner secured a state historical marker recognizing that the hackberry groves were the birthplace of Plainview, Texas. Sadly, in 2008, both of those hackberry trees died of diseases. But the hackberry's legacy lives on. 3 Texas towns and over a dozen creeks still bear the name hackberry. So that's it, everyone. Love them or dismiss them, these rugged, generous trees have quietly rooted themselves into our Texas state history, and hopefully soon, each and every one of our hearts. I feel it's high time we quit referring to them as junk trees and we give these unsung heroes the respect that they deserve next time we visit, and maybe then we can all enjoy everything that they have to offer. Hackberries are a true survivalist of the Central Texas Hill Country, and I hope you all enjoyed this episode on trees. We will be back next week with more episodes about all things nature, and until then, you all stay wild out there. Take care. Bye-bye.